Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
I used to love my morning coffee until it stopped loving me back. The bloating, the discomfort, it just wasn't worth it anymore. Then I found Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee blended with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Now I get my morning ritual without the crash or the discomfort. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, you could win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
A collegiate conspiracy. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
Richard Nixon, what comes to mind? What do you think of?
Obviously, Watergate, criminal activity.
Yeah,
he had made inroads with China is probably the only positive thing.
Wow.
Vietnam,
uh-huh.
Wiretaps,
bad.
I think bad.
You think bad. That makes sense. That makes sense. We're going to be talking about something that is bad from Nixon. And if you remember, we also were on History's Greatest Heists talking about the bank heist that was supposedly started by Nixon leaving some money in this Orange County bank. He had a lot of bad things, bad dealings. And we're going to talk about one that happened nearly 50 years ago on August 8th, 1974. That is when President, at the time, Richard Nixon, told a national television audience that he would be resigning as President of the United States. Really big, kind of, I can see it in my brain. Nixon's announcement, while of course historic, was not completely unexpected. The notorious Watergate scandal 2 years before had unearthed a plethora of presidential abuses of power, captivating the United States during the scandal's hearings in 1973. But few knew that Nixon's political backbone was a group of political, let's say, saboteurs, all originating from an innocuous college campus group based right here in Southern California. Today we'll discuss the Trojans for Representative Government, a very unsexy title considering all of the chaos that this little campus group actually created. Let's get into it. So again, Nixon, bad. We start with Nixon, who is, of course, being investigated for his role in the Watergate break-in 2 years before. Spoiler alert, this investigation had revealed a concerning pattern for Nixon, a pattern of abuses of power, trickery, coercion, and more, all of which captivated the nation during, again, the highly televised Watergate committee hearings, summer of 1973. Donald Segretti, a USC alumni, former attorney with the Treasury Department, and best friends of Dwight L. Chapin, then deputy assistant to President of the United States, was all a part of the team of Watergate, the team that was under fire. Now, I'm going to ask you another question. Does rat fucking mean anything to you?
No, and I'm glad it...
You're glad.
I'm glad
you're clean,
for that.
You're a clean, good boy.
Yeah, I'm a good boy. I'm glad that that doesn't ring any bells for me.
Okay. So Segretti was hired to run a campaign comprised of what he charmingly referred to as rat fucking. Again, his words, not mine. A political methodology of low blows, cheap shots, and dirty tricks, especially when it came to Republican electoral advantages. Sound familiar, maybe? You might know the term from the famed book and movie by Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, All the President's Men, from 1974, chronicling their reporting of the Watergate scandal. And of course, it's not at all relevant to our political climate today. Part of the Watergate trial was a testimony by Segretti on October 3rd, 1973, where he admitted to administering some severely fucked up political tricks, including espionage, dissemination of false information on behalf of Nixon's campaign, creating fake committees and printing straight-up propaganda, all to foil the campaigns of Democratic adversaries. Cool, right? Segretti's most evil shit occurred not only during Watergate, but during his overarching participation and tenure on Nixon's re-election committee, appropriately named the Committee to Re-elect the President, or for short, CREEP, because of course. I know what you're thinking. How bad are we talking? Well, here's a good example. Segretti faked a letter by Edmund Muskie, the frontrunner for the Democratic presidential nominee, on his own letterhead, alleging that the U.S. Senator Henry Scoop Jackson, a fellow Democrat, had an illegitimate child with a 17-year-old girl. This was not true. Another letter, also on good old Muskie's letterhead, accused another senator, Hubert Humphrey, of sexual misconduct. Also not true. These, quote, Muskie letters, you may have heard of them, made Segretti not only a gigantically corrupt asshole, but enemy number one in D.C. at the time. So how did Segretti get this way? Complicated, but to learn the answer to that question, we have to rewind all the way back to his undergrad days at the University of Southern California, where he'd been part of a little college political club known as Trojans for Representative Government, a group that, in time, would produce the fine, upstanding Nixon staffers who had such hits as Watergate and the Muskie letters. Go Trojans. Of course, presidential elections have always been, of course, dirty, you know, but these USC alums had their own particular brand of rat fuckery. Again, their words, not mine. It was lower than most political strategies at the time. This type of political maneuvering grew and thrived in Southern California, beginning way back in 1931. In 1931, one fraternity, Theta Nu Epsilon, dominated USC student politics without question, running campus politics with kind of an iron fist. This went on for 17 more years, with Theta Nu Epsilon, again, running things until 1948, when some other USC students formed a small but formidable opposition party, first called the Free Greeks and later renamed the Trojans for Representative Government. Their goal was to usurp Theta Nu Epsilon as the leading campus political organization by framing themselves as the voice for all students. They tried to draw a stark contrast with the workings of Theta Nu Epsilon by saying that they only served the Greek system and not the students at large. As the years went by, and for obvious reasons, Trojans for Representative Government became an anti-establishment party, one that used tricks to get whatever results aligned with their strategies and goals. This meant that Theta Nu Epsilon, who were of course no saints themselves, also had to step up their underhanded political game themselves. In the 1960s, USC journalism professor Fred Conrad stated in a Time magazine interview about the warring college groups, quote, "Both Theta Nu Epsilon and Trojans for Representative Government historically engaged in illegal activities ranging from stuffing ballot boxes or dropping acid into them to ransacking campaign headquarters and bribing candidates to withdraw from elections." Future California Assembly Leader Walter Karabian, in 1959 the USC student body president, remembered how Ronald Ziegler and Dwight Chapin, two future Nixon aides, remember, Chapin also the guy who hired Segretti, we talked about, falsely accused him of being in an occult secret society as part of a campaign to make him appear like an elitist snob. In 1960, Segretti, Chapin, and Ziegler won a major student government election victory for TRG after several recent and humbling defeats. Was it kosher? Nobody can say. And nobody will say. But it was a good lesson for some power-hungry college baby politicians. Win and do whatever it takes to get there. Chapin met Nixon during his third year at USC. A mere year later, Chapin was hired to work on Nixon's 1962 California gubernatorial campaign and brought Segretti and Ziegler along for the ride. While the campaign was ultimately unsuccessful, Chapin quickly became a power player in Nixon's inner circle. And soon, it was no coincidence that dozens more former TRG members signed on to Nixon's campaign, joining the ranks, signed on to Nixon's presidential campaign, joining the ranks of Nixon's staff. Aside from that strong West Coast tie, what Nixon was doing was very much in the vein of the anti-establishment conservatism that had beaten out the boys of Theta Nu Epsilon. Nixon took a particular liking to Ziegler and Chapin, loving that they shared his humble West Coast roots and didn't come from the elite Ivy Leagues. The connection between the Nixon administration and TRG became public on October 15, 1972, when Washington Post reporters Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward, again famous from All the President's Men, revealed that Segretti was one of the several members of Nixon's staff who had been members of the TRG during their time at USC. The reporting duo also singled out Segretti as a contact person for hiring operatives for the committee to re-elect the president, again nicknamed Creep, whose, like TRG, where he got his start, top priority was to sabotage and annihilate any and all political opponents. In the weeks that followed the publication of Woodward and Bernstein's initial article, the sordid history of the Trojans for representative government finally went public, and the country took notice. Big time. More after this break.
Hi, hello, how are you?
Hello.
How are you doing?
How are you doing out there?
We're checking in.
This is the check-in.
And this is where you're checking out.
Check in, check out, whatever you want. Just roll on through. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know, you guys.
And that is not you just being self-deprecating. You don't really know.
I don't know what day it is. I don't know what time it is.
You just got back from Australia.
I just got back from Australia. And I'm here now in Los Angeles. So world traveler, glamorous, absolutely. Tired? Yes, very much so. Very much so.
Well, I've been holding down the fort here in Los Angeles.
You have, thank God.
I'm the only rock anyone has.
I know, you really are. What would we do without you?
Just speaking to maybe these microphones unplugged, just ranting and
just
raving.
Rant over and over.
Being like, hey, let's reevaluate Nixon. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, we may not love the Nixon administration. We may not.
We may not. Allegedly.
Italy. But we do love the ghost town administration.
We do. How can we not?
Where they've done wrong, this administration has done right, mm-hmm. including mm-hmm. the mayors.
Mm.
But they've done some underhanded things.
Ooh.
But you got to get your hands dirty when you're in politics.
I mean, it's unavoidable. Can you sleep at night? They can.
This mayor made a shady little deal. Where they go in and they're just like, hey, we'll do some zoning.
Ooh.
If you give me extra guac at this Chipotle. People at Chipotle are like, we're not zoned.
We're already zoned.
We're already
for
here.
Commercial.
But they're like, they give a little wink.
Yeah, they're like, they're like, thank you.
And then they're just like, here, take the free guacamole.
I just work here.
Yeah, I don't care. Well, that would be the cutthroat ways of Marissa Rothermill.
Hello.
This mayor said, how about you turn that small drink into a medium?
Ooh!
at a Tender Greens. They have them where you are? That was a place I used to go to. I'd be like, oh, this is so good. Because it is good, but I just...
No, but then you're out of there $30 less. Yeah. Like, for this salad?
Yeah.
All right.
But they're just like, yeah, let me turn that small into a medium. They're like, yeah, whatever.
They're like, we don't even have drink sizes here.
Yeah, just like, sure.
You just have Izzy's.
You're like, sure, mayor. But they got it.
Okay.
It's Matthew Clemens Leray.
Hello.
This mayor walked into McDonald's and said, supersize me, but do not charge me. Remember it was 39 cents you can supersize?
Oh, yeah.
Remember
yeah.
those days? They're like, you don't have to throw your political weight around. We'll just give you the extra size.
No, it's fine. You're like, our business is down because of Morgan Spurlock. And,
yeah.
You know, eat salt. I don't care.
Apparently not a great guy.
No, bad guy.
Bad
guy. Admitted, I mean, he had a public statement around the Me Too era, era. I don't think we're out of the era, but, and he was like, I did harass and be inappropriate and cheat on women. There, I got ahead of it.
Well, and I was also it's sad, but I was also an alcoholic the whole time I was doing this special. So my elevated liver enzymes were going to be like that if I had a salad or if I had McDonald's.
So he's trying to vindicate this giant corporate.
Maybe we'll do
McDonald's.
An episode
on it. You're a hero.
Maybe we'll do an episode on it just to kind of recap.
Yeah,
culturally,
McDonald's
the
needs
impact
us
it
to
had.
Muckrake this situation. Actually, that would be very good because it is a very complicated, interesting thing. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Well, that's our mayor who said supersize me, and they're like, we don't, Casey
like,
Weber.
Hello.
This mayor said, I want avocado toast. I don't care if it ruins the economy. Isn't avocado toast like, oh, it's like if everyone's eating too much avocado
It's like,
toast,
that's why you can't buy a house.
Yeah, because you're eating too much avocado toast.
I mean, it's fine.
And this was done in an Earth Cafe, which you probably don't have where you are.
Unless you've been watching Entourage, then
but
you
if
know
you've been
exactly
watching Entourage,
about, you know
like
exactly.
we've been poisoning our mind, squandering the life. Fleeting moments we have on Earth rewatching Entourage.
Yeah, it's really sick.
It's making
it's
us
sick.
Very
We're
problematic. Because we just sit there and be like, this is bad.
Uh huh.
Well, that's all of avocado toast, Kelly Meehan.
Hello.
In fact, I Kelly is on the East Coast, so she is annoyed.
She is,
but she's probably seen Entourage.
She probably has.
I'll ask her. I'll talk to her. I might see her. I'm going to be in Philly in November in New York and New Jersey, so doing some stand up or whatever. So come say hi, or don't. come say goodbye.
Come say goodbye.
This mayor, throwing her weight around, saying, I'm not here with my whole family, but I want to sit in the family round of a Buca di Pepa, right? When you sit in that round section. Again, you might not have Buca di Pepa. But I think this mayor
will know. Buca di Pepo?
Buca di Pepo.
Buca di Pepo?
Is it Pepa or Pepo?
I thought it was Beppo. Am I wrong?
Buca di Beppo? Oh, maybe it is.
I went to prom there twice.
Oh,
so
Buca di Beppo?
Buca di Beppo.
Is it Beppo or Pepo?
I don't care.
My mom loves it.
Please wait. It's great. I mean, I don't know. It's been decades since I've been there.
No, my mom, like, loves it. I like it, too. Mm. Michelle, my wife, hates it.
Why? What?
She doesn't like garbage. She grew up, like, she's a foodie.
She grew up in L.A.
She grew up in L.A., like, eating at, like, nice places. And we've traveled and eaten at, like, Michelin star restaurants. But I'm like, my family.
No, feed me trash.
We went to Italy for my sister got married in Rome. We went to the Hard Rock Cafe in Rome three times in like 4 days.
Wow.
That's where our family is.
I love that. I love that. I don't even know what they serve. They're burgers? What's at a Hard Rock?
Yeah.
French
fries?
French fries.
Wings. Well, this mayor said, I want to sit in that big round. I don't have a family, but I want to sit there with my two friends. And I'll shut this place down. They're like, you won't.
Yeah, but they're like, don't worry. We will have a water and an app to share.
It's Kat Rozelle.
Hello.
This mayor said, going back to McDonald's, what happened to McDonald's? It used to be, had a color palette and like a play area. And then it turned into like this like kind of square, like brutalist kind of a very brown thing, like to be like more adult. Mm-hmm. Like what happened? What happened to the little jail in the McDonald's playland?
Oh, Hamburglar jail?
Yeah, Hamburglar jail. What happened to the prison? What happened to all that? Like, what changed? I mean, we know that you can talk about how McDonald's was like, we want to not, like, we don't need to appeal to kids anymore.
Mm-mm.
We want to appeal to, like, adults where you can get, like, a coffee, a place that adults could go and chat. Like, we want to compete with, like, the Starbucks and other places. And the food never changed.
No.
But they realized, like, we don't need to sell to kids anymore.
No.
That's at least my thought of why they, and I guess you have to adapt, and it's probably working. But this mayor said, what the hell? Get out Mayor McCheese, another mayor to mayor. They're like, Mayor McCheese is in a scandal.
Yeah, exactly. Mayor McCheese is dead.
Yeah. Assassinated.
Actually, yeah, exactly. Well, allegedly.
Allegedly. Well, that would be our mayor, Ashley Mattson.
Hello.
And then our governor.
Mm-hmm.
All these things behind it all.
Mm.
She's like, what can I shut down? What can I close up? What can I amp up? What kind of prices can I raise?
Yeah.
What can I do? What corners can I cut?
Mm.
What place can I turn into a sweatshop? And people will do it.
She's very nice, though.
She's very nice and is an artist. But in this world,
we've created taskmaster.
I mean, we've created
she's our god and we worship her.
Yeah, I mean, it's just we really created this
narrative. Don't say her name in vain.
Yeah. You know her. You fear her. Our governor, Avian Noble. If you want no ads, no chit-chat, bonus episode, 7 days free, working on a bonus episode right now.
Mm-hmm.
Hello to any new patrons that we've had some new patrons come in. Our pal at Swindled gave a little shout out on their Patreon, and we want to shout out Swindled's one of our favorite podcasts.
Concerned citizen.
Yeah.
Himself.
Concerned citizen, which we met.
Yeah, he's very cool.
Identity is secret.
Yeah, we can't say. But we don't also know.
We also know. We also can't say.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't show me his license or anything.
No, but yeah.
You know.
But head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
Mm-hmm. Let's get back to 1972, though.
I wasn't even born yet.
You weren't even.
That's how I like this one. It's like, I wasn't even born yet.
You like the ones where you're not born yet.
Yeah, ooh, I'm so young.
I know, just a baby. So in the wake of the Watergate scandal, several California newspapers covered the shady history of Trojans for representative government and its connection to the GOP, including the Los Angeles Times. It was then that the Times interviewed our old friend, USC journalism professor Fred Coonrad, who had been the professorial advisor of USC's student newspaper, The Daily Trojan, since 1948. He told the Times that the USC student government elections had long mirrored the tactics now made known by the Nixon administration. In his own words, he told reporters, quote, "Every year at USC is a Watergate." Of course, the LA Times pieces put Trojans for representative government in the national spotlight, and America learned just how systemic Nixon's shady political ties ran. Because of this, TRG eventually disbanded at USC and kind of informally in the world, but their legacy and tactics live on. How, you might ask? In men like Roger Ailes, the one-time Nixon strategist who went on to found Fox News, using a TRG strategy called the orchestra pit theory. You will probably know this theory as it's used around us every day. The theory is that shocking headlines garner more attention, not brain science, but again, something that was not used really up until this point as... Then there's Lee Atwater, another TRG alum who ran George H.W. Bush's 1988 campaign, which famously tied Democratic candidate Michael Dukakis to a, quote, subversive organization known as the ACLU. More famously, according to the Time piece on TRG, quote, Atwater viciously scapegoated Dukakis for the actions of convicted murderer William Horton, setting a damaging precedent for race baiting in American politics. While a political group separate from the Bush campaign ran the famous weekend passes and featured Horton's mugshot, Atwater capitalized on its success to skewer Dukakis on the crime. And now we get to 2016. Roger Stone, an associate working on the Trump campaign, actually broke into politics as a moderate liberal, one who always knew he had to spin the truth to get what he wanted. Quote, I remember going through the cafeteria line and telling every kid that Nixon was in favor of school on Saturdays. It was my first political trick. Eventually, and kind of ironically, he began working as a very young intern on Nixon's staff, although he refused to identify with the USC mafia of Segretti and Chapin. And he actually didn't go to USC, but George Washington University. But he didn't have to align with them. He used all their old tricks that he soaked in as a young 20-year-old, brought to fruition as a Trump casino lobbyist, and eventually on the Trump campaign. It all came to a head on January 25th, 2019, in a pre-drawn raid by 29 FBI agents acting on both an arrest warrant and a search warrant at his Fort Lauderdale, Florida home. Stone was arrested on 7 criminal charges of an indictment in the Mueller investigation, 1 count of obstructing an official proceeding, 5 counts of false statements, and 1 count of witness tampering. The judge requested that Stone be sentenced to 7 to 9 years in prison for his crimes, but after Trump got involved, he was sentenced to 40 months in federal prison and a $20,000 fine, and eventually Trump commuted his prison time to 0 months, a couple days before he was set to be incarcerated. The story of Trojans for representative government provided a historical grounding for the dirty election tactics we live with today. Although TRG was a relatively short-lived political group, considering, the legacy as the boys behind Watergate, the USC mafia ratfuckers, and Nixon's henchmen of course live on in ways we still see, unfortunately, nearly every day.